You're listening to Around Comics, episode 261, brought to you by InStockTrades.com. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is back at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles.
After, I forgot what this place looks like.
I know, it's like after like a month and a half away, we are back at our home store.
That's like a comfy old prostitute.
I know, doesn't it feel good?
It is like a comfy old prostitute.
You know what you're getting.
You know what you're getting.
Good to see you, Frida.
And the price is right.
Fantastic.
Well, you can visit that comfy old prostitute at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, you should certainly drop by, see Mr. Mark Beatty. He'll take care of all of your needs.
He'll take care of everything.
Mark's got you covered. Don't worry about it.
He got it.
Don't worry.
Don't worry about it.
You need Batman? I got Batman. You need cheap Batman? I got a lot of cheap.
Come out to the back. We'll set you up. Don't worry about it.
You got a lot of cheap Batman.
Hey there, folks. I'm Christopher Naisman. Let's get you introduced to this week's panel, as always, Mr. Tom Caters.
Hi, how are you?
I am wonderful, Tom. And yourself?
I'm doing good. We got beards. A lot of beards going here. You got a little salt and pepper in yours, though.
You guys are killing me.
As my dad says, you know, we all end up being silverbacks at some point. So I've got a little bit of the gray. Even though I'm working on the Ra's al Ghul, you know, the ghoul. The dual gray streak.
I'd like to send that to
beard
my barber.
Is no longer cool at all. I'm working on the Ra's al Ghul as Ghul Ball.
Oh, you don't want the Stephen Strange? I'm sorry. We need a barber to the comic book stars. That would be good.
Hey, I think
Dr. Strange, he likes to get a little off the top. He likes to trim the beard a little bit.
Paul Gambier facial hair. For
exactly.
There's a
little picture
there's a
of Zatara in the back. Thanks. Best shave I ever got.
There is a market there. But our next guest, of course, is the voice of Word Balloon, Mr. John Suntress.
Hi. Good to see everybody.
It's good to see you too.
It's cracking me up. It really is. It's like a hunting lodge in here with your guys' beards.
I'm going trap shooting tomorrow.
There you go.
Nice. Tomorrow hunting lodge.
Nice. You know, I used to work for a trap shooting company.
Really?
I could set you up with a shooting vest.
Oh. Thank God I got the deep voice. Otherwise, I'd feel very emasculated next to all the facial hair that I'm dealing with.
I'd be pretty down with that.
Heck yeah, man. Des Moines, Iowa. I used to work for Bob Ellen Sportswear.
The guy I'm
Sportswear.
Going with...
one of the great trap shooters of this country, by the way.
One of the greatest trap shooters.
I've got his trading cards, yes.
I am going with someone who I think is into trap shooting just for the clothes. Like the vest,
Eddie
Bauer. Shows up fucking styling.
Nice.
For the trap shooting.
Hey, man, it's big business. I bet you ask him about Bob Allen. I bet you he's got some
sportswear. We'll get our shotguns and we'll just be walking around.
So what is trap shooting? For the uninitiated.
We go,
clay pigeons.
Sporting clays, which
I see.
You drive up to Racine. Wisconsin's a paradise for those who want to do dangerous things like fireworks.
Hunting Disneyland, absolutely.
I don't need a license to shoot a gun in Wisconsin. You just go. Go there, you get a gun and you shoot, and you have the clay pigeons flying everywhere. You shoot.
We have said that Wisconsin is like international waters.
You can do anything.
In Wisconsin.
I forget the guy's name who used to produce the Sports Writers TV and radio show, and then also was a good friend of Steve Dahl's. But he would always come back from Wisconsin with local newspaper clippings of all the hunting accidents and bizarre they were. it was like a weekly hilarious feature on the radio.
90% involved alcohol.
What are the odds?
We went up to Green Bay for Thanksgiving, my lovely wife and I, and
Happy Hanukkah to Sam
and those members of
the
chosen people. We're driving up through Wisconsin and we stop at a gas station at like 9 in the morning, and there was a bunch of guys in blaze orange buying like 3 cases of beer. Well, hey, listen. It gets fucking boring, man. You gotta do something.
You gotta get ripped.
former Bear linebacker Doug Buffon spends his Thanksgivings in a deer stand, and you know, with his gun and his son, and absolutely, that's a father son family tradition. The rest of the family understands.
Disappointed that we did not see one truck with a deer strapped to the front of it, which my wife always loves. So she's like, oh my god, why do they have? Like, you can't put it in the back seat. We're like, what are you gonna do? strapped to the top of your car. What are you going to put it in your trunk? And
no, it's true.
Drive around with that dead deer.
Hey, God's country, baby.
It's beautiful. It's the best place on earth.
Unbelievable.
You can do it. You can light up fireworks, shoot guns, and drink. This gun club has a bar. Which you can go to afterwards, of course.
It's I thought most gun clubs were bars, but all right, that's fine.
A little conservative, I'll say. Their political leanings are a little to the right of where I usually lie.
And they carry guns.
What was that?
And they carry guns.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of all tied together.
Listen, we can all agree to disagree when it comes to the fun of shooting clay pigeons.
Hey, there you go.
Excellent.
There you go. Well, if you like hunting, you should probably check out Elk's Run. Which you can pick up at InStockTrades.com.
Nice.
You go. Josh Fialkoff's fine opus with Noel Toussaint.
Is it about hunting?
Truly an excellent story.
Yeah,
really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, Elk's Run
very,
is great.
Very interesting.
Fantastic. What's the best hunting story? Best hunting comic book?
Sweet Tooth?
I think you're right about that.
Hunting the Jeff most Lemire's, dangerous game of all.
Yeah.
Mutated humans.
Exactly.
But you can check out whenever the Sweet Tooth trade comes out. You can find that at InStockTrades.com. And we, as always, are sponsored by InStockTrades.com. We're waiting for the trade. It's never been easier. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, absolute editions, omnibus editions, essential showcases, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. And you can check out later this week our Hellblazer Dangerous Habits book club discussion, which I know that it'll come out this week because we already did it, right, Tom?
Yeah.
So,
catch a case of Funser.
Mm-hmm.
Funser.
Yeah. You can still pick that up at In Stock Trades for 47% off the cover price. It can be yours for $7.94, I believe. So so go check that out at InStockTrades.com. And the holiday season is upon us, and so I want to give a special shout out to the folks at InStockTrades.com and DCB Service, because they are a fantastic supporter of comic book podcasts.
Absolutely.
They sponsor more comic book podcasts than anyone else out there on the internet. So if you and I, obviously, if you're listening to Around Comics, you're a fan of comic book podcasts, either that or you're a masochist, which I can understand. Yeah. But if you enjoy comic
book...
Or
you're in prison, and you just don't have a lot of options.
You need something to listen to. If you like you should certainly support InStockTrades.com and their sister company DCB Service, because they really support the comic book podcast community. John, their sponsor, show.
They do a wonderful job too. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. We're happy to have their patronage, but also we are happy that they exist to buy books from, because they do an incredible job.
Yep.
And it's a very good store.
Yep. And they're also a brick and mortar store in Fort Wayne, Indiana, if you're ever there.
True.
And congratulations on their new store. They moved locations.
Did they move locations?
Yeah, which we gotta find out where they are for the next time we head down there.
And in the spring they're gonna have a big kind of live show with creators and stuff to it. I'm sure all of the podcasts will be talking about.
Yeah, I think the Windy City Comic Con may have played a little part in helping to inspire them to put on their own small scale, medium scale convention there in the Fort Wayne area, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely,
be a good time. So, so check them out.
We've got a video of their store that's at the Warbling website, and Chris as our tour guide, and we walk around the aisles and stuff.
It is a comic book fan's wet dream,
and also
it's awesome,
and also plenty of video of Dark Tower too. So if you come to the Word Balloon website, there's certainly examples of both stores.
Yep. So we're gonna chat here for a couple more minutes, but for fans of Alex Robinson and his work, which includes
Box Office Poison
and Tricked and Too Cool to Be Forgotten and the recently released A Kidnapped Santa Claus, we're gonna be talking with Alex Robinson in a couple of minutes, so
he's
sure
my
to
go-to
hang
gift author. Like if I looking to buy a graphic novel for someone who doesn't usually read graphic novels, I will buy one of his. I've given Box Office Poison to numerous friends as gifts.
Oh, it's fantastic! Yeah. And my wife actually Tricked is one of the few graphic novels that she's read that she actually enjoyed. Right. And that's a hard sell for my
She's
wife.
Read a lot and she's hated a lot.
I'm not going to say that publicly, but
just did. Sorry, Tom will do it.
This is stupid.
I don't get this.
Why
is there a dragon in this?
Our dragon
you married Andy Rooney? I was surprised about that.
Why is there a dragon in this? That whenever a dragon shows up,
my husband Chris came in and gave me this book.
Well, you know,
had to throw it.
The line of Minx books, which I actually kind of enjoyed the Minx
it's
books.
Because you're secretly a teenage girl inside.
I just like saying Cecil Castellucci. Boy, oh boy, what a name.
But it was Josh Howard, who does Dead at 17. Mm-hmm. He did the art on a Minx book called Clubbing, which she loved like 5/6 of that book. And then at the very end,
a
dragon shows up, and she's like, I can hear her out in the living room. It's like, God damn it! And I'm like, what? She's like, this is stupid. I like this, and he ruined it. I'm like, oh, wow. God.
It's when the elf kills the dragon on a dance floor.
I'll help her. Sends
my wife into a tailspin.
Conniption fit.
Yeah. She was nonplussed by that.
I'll be listening to Andy in the back room if anyone
needs me. I'm constantly giving my wife mid-70s Legion of Superhero books to read. Like, get into comics. Come on.
For the Mike Grell.
Well,
for the Mike Grell art alone.
You don't enjoy a good regular story? Come on. Who doesn't enjoy Space Pirates?
How does Cosmic Boy's uniform stay up? He doesn't have any shoulders.
Listen, yeah, that's an unfortunate costume.
I understand.
I'm just constantly giving her mid-70s comic books. Like, this is how you get into comics. The only way to get into comics is to force them to read mid-70s comic books. It's the only way to get people into comics.
Wow.
It's the only proven method.
Man, drove me away the first time.
How's that work for you?
And she loves Mike Grell. Jerry Conway. She loves Jerry Conway stuff. And,
speaking of Mike Grell, by the way, Warlord, man, I'm telling you, walked away. Oh, yeah, it's so, yeah. Honestly, and I know that it's, you know, this fringe book that I don't even know if it'll make it past 12 issues.
Yeah.
But it's, and I picked up that showcase of the old
showcase
stuff. And I mean, honestly, it's fantastic. So yeah, I'm very happy that Mike is back with his character, Travis.
Cool. Warlord.
One shout out here, Logan from Regina. Is that how you pronounce the?
I'm assuming it's Regina. Is it really Regina? All right.
Okay.
Regina.
Canada.
Regina.
Sent us a sixer of Brecknock Brewing's organic malt. It's their Pilsner, and so we've got some Canadian organic beer here on the show, and it's interesting.
It's an acquired taste.
If you
want to acquire a soap aftertaste in your mouth, I
appreciate it. Mine's exploding.
Thanks, yeah, it tastes organic beer is like no other beer that I have tasted right now, and I'm gonna have to sip on it here. But Logan, thank you very much.
Absolutely,
because sending liquid goods across international borders, you may have broken some laws.
I've reported you.
But everything did come here intact. So thank you very much.
The Mounties are coming.
Yeah, maybe the Border Patrol put shit in the beer. I don't know.
He also sent me a fantastic Greg Rucka and J.H. Williams signed 11x17 print of Detective.
I know we get Dick. We get organic beer that tastes like soap. Yeah. I guess that's about it.
I don't get anything. No one ever sends me.
Tom,
anything.
You get our love.
I know, man.
Tom, you know what you get? You get a Brett Favre Minnesota Vikings jersey.
Did Pat Leica send you a Christmas?
Yeah, I got that. Thank you.
So did I. Thank you, Pat.
I got it was the Flash running past Quicksilver with Quicksilver lying on the ground.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Excellent.
All right, John.
I got a lovely original Golden Age shield from Pat. And I thank you, Pat.
Oh, cool. The character that Eric Troutman's writing.
Yes,
now?
But the old one, the classic one,
the classic Golden Age.
Yes. Just a shield, just a shield.
Your 1940 shield.
Yeah.
Pat sent me a fantastic Jugger Grimrod, and I get blank stare. Alien Legion. People.
Sorry. Okay, there you go.
Which he knows my love for Alien Legion.
That's cool.
And people just tease. People might want to look and start picking that up for something coming up at some point with Around Comics.
Interesting.
Alien Legion?
I think a Book of the Month Club is coming.
Oh, later. Shit.
Sorry.
Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
That's Mike, you ever read Alien Legion?
Yeah. Got
It was the mom, Jerry wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, we just evoked his name.
Mike Norton.
One more name in it, I think it's going to come like Beetlejuice.
Yep, Mike Norton just came in and
Mike Norton pinstrolled in. He doesn't walk
anywhere.
Pat Wilka
sent me a Jugger Grimrod sketch for Christmas, which was very cool. So, all right, well, I tell you what, we talked about Alex Robinson for a few minutes. Let's go ahead and give him a call.
We talked about him. Now let's talk at him.
All right, and we've reshuffled the decks here in between musical breaks there. Now playing the role of John Suntress is Hank. Hank, how you doing, buddy?
I feel intimidated.
No, don't feel intimidated. It's Hank. Hank's a big Alex Robinson fan, so
yes,
he wanted to sit in with us. And
don't fuck this up, Hank.
Yeah, don't screw it up, Hank.
I'm sorry.
And joining us on the line is Mr. Alex Robinson. Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing great, everybody. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. You are a New Yorker, is that correct?
This is correct.
Well, happy holidays to
Are you part
to
of the liberal
York?
Elite that we hear so much about in Chicago?
This is true.
He's like, oh my God, what kind of
What
kind of an interview have I walked into?
I want it. If I moved there, I'd be liberal elite too. I don't fit here.
Well, Alex, you have a brand new spanking book, which has been released from HarperCollins, and it is called A Kidnapped Santa Claus, and it is adapted by you, and it is originally an L. Frank Baum story. Tell us a little bit about what A Kidnapped Santa Claus is about, and how you got involved in the project to do this.
Well, as you say, it is a book, a short story originally by L. Frank Baum, who was probably most famous for the Wizard of Oz books that everyone, or at least the movie that everyone knows. He wrote the original story. So, it was just a 11-page story, and HarperCollins approached me about they were going to come out with a line of children's books where they have cartoonists adapt various classic Christmas short stories into comics form, and that was the story I picked from the ones they had, and I figured there was three challenges. I'd never adapted someone else's work, someone else's story. I'd never written a book that was kind of all ages, and I'd never, it was the first book I'd done with like a big, you know, mainstream real publisher, so it was a lot of learning there going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And whenever I picked it up this week, because I knew that we were going to be talking with you, and I started flipping through it, and you know, the first thing whenever I look at a Christmas book that is done by a pretty well known independent comic book artist and writer as yourself, I'm like, okay. The first thing I'm thinking is this going to be something that I'm going to be able to give to my friends or give to my nephews?
Is there going to be a full page spread of Santa saying like "fuck you"?
Yeah. I hate Christmas. But there's some creepy stuff going on in here, and so at first glance, I was like, oh, I don't know if my very conservative sister-in-law is going to let my 7 and 9 year old nephews read this. But then I started getting into the book, and what looks kind of creepy at the beginning is a pretty heartwarming Christmas tale, and so you do something that I think is a keystone of the best children's literature, is that it is entertaining and accessible to adults, but it is something that kids, whenever they read it, they're not going to be bored, because I think some children's literature can get a little too vanilla and maybe a little too boring for kids. And I think this is something that my nephews are going to totally dig. So I'm planning on giving this to them for Christmas. But was that something that you were very conscious of jumping into it? Is making it something that was going to appeal to the fans of your existing work, like, you know, Box Office Poison and Tricked?
Well, it wasn't a conscious thing where I said, I'm going to make it so that those people will like it. It was just kind of like, that's just the way I work is, you know, I work in the style I work in. I definitely was conscious of the fact that I wanted to make it so, you know, I think the target audience I had in mind was like 9 or 10 year olds. Mm-hmm. So, So that, you know, I was trying to do a book that I imagine I would have liked when I was 10, which is always the way I do all my books is, you know, I'm trying to say, well, what kind of book would I like to read? And in this case, it was just, well, what kind of book would I like to write when I was 10 years old? So I'm glad to, it's tough because, I mean, I would never think to put demons in a story that I was writing for 10-year-olds, but yeah. It's in the Frank Baum original, so you know that's the way they pitched the book to me. They're like, "How about it's a story about demons kidnapping Santa Claus?" And I was like, "I'm sold on that idea."
Sounds awesome.
And it was awesome. It was great. And okay, I do have one question about: is there a Star Wars reference in this book?
I think they kind of slip out even unconsciously at this point. I know at one point they have. Santa in their crosshairs when they're mm-hmm. about to kidnap him, and they say,
"Stay on target."
You know, almost there.
Stay on target.
Stay on target, which is, you know.
If my reindeer freezes before I hit the first marker, I'll see you in hell.
Yeah, I should have put that in.
No, I read that. And I was like, that is totally a Star Wars reference, and that is awesome because that is something.
Well, I'll save the Empire Strikes Back references for the second one, and then the third one will have Jedi references. So.
It was fantastic. I really enjoyed that, and it's a nice little coffee table. I don't want to say coffee table book, but this is it's great stocking stuffer size. It's what the trim side is. It's what about 5x7-ish or so.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it's a nice little hardcover. It retails for $14.99, and I picked it up on Amazon. They had it in stock and zipped it right to me. So it's a great little last minute Christmas present, or especially for us comic book fans that are always looking for ways to slip comic books to friends and relatives whenever they're least expecting it. This is a great way to do that.
There are heroin dealers that are less subtle than comic book fans trying to get other people.
Here, man. Here, just a little taste. And if you like this, I got some box office poison over here.
Well, I also tried to include a lot of references to classic Christmas, the Christmas specials of old. Like, I refer to a dentist elf and some other things that the adults will probably find entertaining.
Oh,
as well,
and I really enjoyed the main character, who's kind of like this little kind of librarian esque hipster fairy, and she right off the bat, you know, says, "I'm not an elf, I'm a fairy," which I thought was very humorous once you get into the story, and it's just a really fun holiday book. So I think it's one of those, you know, we say in the comic industry that it could be an evergreen book. So, you know, I hope that this is a book that has a really nice, long life for people that look for, you know, fun and different comic book stories to kind of, you know, give to their kids and friends. So I think you did a really nice job with this, Alex.
Oh, well, thank you very much. One line I did read is that someone said that it should be made into claymation. Or that it should be claymated. I would love to be claymated.
What's the tone of the original story? Like, is it comparable to his Wizard of Oz? Have you read the Wizard of Oz books? Like the original?
I've never actually read the any Oz books, so I can't compare it. But it's strange because I think. In a strange way, well, it deals with a lot of morality, you know, like concepts of like repentance and, you know, and things like that. And, I think I had to do some changes to it because I think kids nowadays are probably a little too sophisticated for, I think the original one would only appeal to very small children because I think kids nowadays are exposed to a lot more quicker. I mean, I was thinking about it, and a kid, by the time a child is like 6 years old, they've watched thousands of hours of television and movies and read children's books and comics or whatever, whereas, you know, when the original story was written in 1911, you know, books are the only books or people telling you a story were the only way to get story. So kids are probably a bit more naive then. So I had to sort of, you know, tinker around with it a bit to make it more exciting and more
You had to Xbox it up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the other odd thing is that I think at the time the book was, the original story was written, the sort of Santa Claus, you know, to put in comic book terms, like the Santa Claus continuity was not quite established. Yeah. Like
he was still carrying guns.
This is the Earth One Santa. Or
You can tell from the insignia.
Like, he didn't live the North Pole. He lived in Laughing Valley. Yeah. And his reindeer didn't fly, and he doesn't have elves. So it's very odd. You know, I had to sort of work around that because I think kids would be annoyed and confused if I did not at least include some of the classics.
The kids would get on the internet and be like, excuse me, have you not read any Santa Claus stories in the last 30 years?
That's the first thing that you do in the book is that there's this great opening, you know, kind of splash page for comic book terms where you're like, Santa lives in Laughing Valley, and I was like, oh, okay, that's different. But then you have this little map of Santa's big workhouse and all of this where the fairies live and the nooks and what are they Ryles? They're like little. How do you pronounce that?
Well, I have no idea because it's a Baum thing, and I've never heard it spoken. So
they're like
a couple
little
of words in there.
Yeah, they're like little goat people.
Yeah, yeah. I just totally made up, and the name comes from Baum, but I don't know what they how to pronounce it or what they're supposed to look like or anything. So I just kind of had free reign to play around.
Yeah, 1911 Santa Claus did not have elves. He had goat people. He carried a sword, and he actually hated most children. You had to fight him for your gift. He would come to your house.
Hand-to-hand combat.
It was a much different age back then.
It was a harsher world back then.
He was a Hussian. He was a Hussian mercenary.
Yes, he had to travel through battle lines to deliver the presents. But no, there is a great moral theme that runs through it. But you have a nice little romance mixed in, and
a little bit. I don't want. I know kids get kind of bored with that stuff, so I just made it kind of like a crush kind of romance.
Yeah.
Not really like.
Yeah,
they don't do it at the end.
No, no, no. But there's another. that's volume two.
Yeah.
The PG-13 version. Yeah.
Oh ho ho.
But
it'll
no,
be like Harry Potter, where they grow every year, and then by the end, they're like
doing it.
They're just like disaffected 30-year-olds dressed in elf suits. But whatever. We can load it or not. I don't care. The sleigh gets there or it doesn't.
Well, Alex, I also noticed that you had a nice little thank you page on the back, which was a very cute way of giving your thank yous out. And one of the people that you thank in there was Colonel Staros for his wise counsel. And I'm assuming that is Chris Staros. Is that correct?
Yes, that is. That's my affectionate nickname for Chris Staros, being the Elvis fan that he is.
Chris is one of our absolute favorite people in the industry. We put on a little show here in Chicago called the Windy City Comic Con, and Chris was one of our exhibitors last year, and he's been a guest on the show. And we're big fans of Top Shelf. Jeffrey Brown is a friend of ours and has been on the show quite a bit. He's a Chicagoan, and so we have an extra big soft spot in our hearts for Top Shelf, and you are one of the really big creators at Top Shelf. We talked a little bit about Box Office Poison and Tricked. I'm assuming that this that A Kidnapped Santa Claus is not your departure from Top Shelf. Can we hopefully expect to see you do some more stuff with them in the future?
Yeah, I'm definitely there was no ill will about this book, and I certainly I'm be happy to have Top Shelf do some of my things in the future. I think this is just HarperCollins just approached me with this, and it was just such a I think even Staros knew it was kind of a good opportunity because if the book exposes my work to a wider audience, then that hopefully some of them will come back and check out the other books. And
if you want to see Santa Claus get into some real shit, you got to follow it over to Top Shelf, where you'll really see what's
sense. Adults only, Santa.
Yeah. Go check out Lost Girls.
Yeah.
But, oh God. but no, I actually talked to Chris about that last October whenever he was in town, and this is when Jeff Lemire, his Sweet Tooth was getting ready to be released by Vertigo, and Matt Kent was doing Three Story with Dark Horse, and I asked Chris about that. I was like, you know, do you feel like your creators are kind of leaving or going off and doing other projects for other publishers? And he's like, no, it's awesome because, you know, it's going to open that up to a wider audience, and people that read Three Story are going to come back and they're going to pick up Super Spy, and people that read Sweet Tooth are going to come back and get Essex County and Jeff's work. People that read The Nobody are going to look into that.
Right.
And so, you know, I know talking with Chris that, you know, he would be very positive about you doing stuff at HarperCollins because, you know, they're going to go and they're going to pick up Box Office Poison. So, and Tricked. So, which is very cool. Now, speaking of, do you have some more creator-owned stuff coming out from Top Shelf that we should be looking on? I know that your projects have a tendency of taking, you know, a couple years because you do it all. You're one of those guys that writes everything, draws everything, and you're pretty meticulous about it.
You can't force a Santa Claus story.
Yeah. I mean, you can't rush greatness.
You can't rush a Santa Claus story.
But you know, how long did you work on Box Office Poison as an example?
Well, Box Office Poison took me 6 years to do, but that was did come out in floppies. That, you know, was serialized as it was coming out, so it wasn't like I spent 6 years, you know, with no no feedback or anything.
In a mountain lodge, emerging fully formed.
But yeah, go ahead.
So I was going to say, I am working on a new book. I've not gotten public in any of the details yet, and so I couldn't say when it'll be released or anything. It's shaping up to be a longer book again, probably a couple of hundred pages, but I'd like to serialize it somehow this time around, either, you know, manga style with a series of trades or maybe even on the internet or something like that, just to...
Well, that's something I wanted to ask you. Your first book, Box Office Poison, which was serialized, that was like 600 pages, right? And then Tricked was around 350. And then it seems they've gotten smaller and smaller. How long is this one? This one's...
Oh, he's pointing at, Santa, which is...
This is audio, Hank.
It's like 65 pages.
Yeah. Okay, so what is your process on how do you approach each project differently when they're such different sizes?
Well, I think, in the case of Box Office, it really depends on the story. In the case of Box Office Poison, I really, you know, I was a huge Dave Sim fan growing up, and I love the idea of doing a big, you know, honking great phone book size book and telling a long, you know, thing with a big cast. And whereas a book like Too Cool to Be Forgotten, which is only like 150 pages or something, I didn't think the story could really support a big, long, the structure was such where it wouldn't be able to support a big, long story. You kind of had to get in and out of there, otherwise it would start to creak. But so like the news story I'm working on, it is, you know, a big cast again, and I plan to have a lot of characters and meandering story, so it does seem to call for a longer format again. It really depends on the project. I think also as I get older, I'm slowing down, so it's tempting to do shorter books because, you know, you don't want to spend 10 years working on one project and, you know, having bomb at the end.
You and me both, brother. You revisited Box Office Poison with more BOP. Do you like having that open door to go back and revisit some of these folks do they kind of like pull you back in these characters to say, hey, there's more story here, you need to write a couple more chapters here, or do you find yourself ever in a position where you're like, no, that story is told and I need to move on and you know, get to know new characters?
Yeah, unfortunately it's more towards the latter, about sort of kind of being done, because most of the stories in the Thin Bop companion book were done as I was working on the big book.
Mm-hmm.
They were stuff I did for anthologies or backup stories, so I think only a very small percentage of that was done actually after the story ended, because I felt kind of like when I ended it, I was like, well, I don't really have much else to say about these characters.
That was, yeah, that you're sick of them.
And, I do get asked a lot, and people say, "Oh, you know, I think it's still my most popular book." So people naturally, you know, not unexpectedly, people want to see more of it. But yeah, you know, I'm not shutting the door on it. But for the moment, I, you know, it's not like there's anything. I don't really have anything new to say about them. I don't want to just have, hey, everyone, we're just getting back together just for the sake of, you know, because it would sell some books. I don't, you know, I don't want to do that. It would, I think people would see through that.
Yeah, you're one of those guys that you know. I think it's the shining light of independent comic book creators. I mean, when
well, thank you.
Well, yeah.
Any other questions? Does anyone else have any other praise for me?
No, the prettiest man in comics.
I was blind until I picked up a copy of Box Office Poison, and it healed my vision and taught me to read all within the first five pages.
And not trying to kiss too much ass here, but
just,
you know,
just the right amount.
But your work is very accessible. It's one of those that you know, Tom was talking, I think, off mic, that BOP is one of those books that he can feel very comfortable giving to mm-hmm. friends that mm-hmm. haven't read comics yeah. before, and
all
say,
my
hey.
Disaffected friends.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's, so you're a very accessible comic book creator that I think you know, we can give your work to people and say, hey, you know, you may not want to read Superman. Here's some stuff about real people that can be very...
Well, to be fair, what I do is I give him Box Office Poison and I slip a Superman comic into the middle of it. So.
It's quite a turn. Yeah.
Bronze Age comic.
I slide it right in there.
It is so... Yeah. It's so hard to keep up with what's going on in the indie comic scene. There are so many fantastic creators out there from mini comics, you know, through serialized stuff and graphic novels. But I have a feeling that you make your rounds around the circuit through conventions, and then I'm probably through the New York comic book community. Is there any other stuff out there that we should be aware of or on the lookout for that is really exciting you in comics right now?
Ironically enough, the comics I've been reading lately, like, I just found out about this comic called Fables. I don't know if you ever heard about that one. So, ironically, I'm turning more towards sort of maybe the alternative mainstream books like Vertigo stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think once I became, went pro, I enjoy comics, but it's like a different thing. It's sort of like I read them to keep up with what's going on, and there's hardly mm-hmm. anything that like really, you know, knocks me out. And the stuff that does tends to be the same stuff that everyone likes, like Chris Ware or you know, somebody like that. So
yeah, you know, it's funny. We talked to Jeffrey Brown, and I mean, Jeffrey is, you know, kind of the epitome of the indie darling for a lot of people. Yeah. Huge Marvel fan. I mean, Jeff shops in this store, and he's, you know, he can keep up with superhero talk just, you know, with anybody. So it always kind of tickles me whenever you know, whenever we talk to a lot of independent comic book creators, and they're just as dialed in with what's going on with comics.
Chris wants you to be starving and reading a black and white French comic about like two talking plates, one which is broken, like that you can barely understand. That's what he wants. Well, that was the answer he wanted from you. And
I think my taste actually, and I think my taste generally goes towards strong
Tom.
Stories.
Yeah.
So because of that, I think a lot of the when I started off doing comics, I thought I was going to be sort of the I thought the Comics Journal was going to be praising me, and I'd be, you know, the poster boy, and then it turned out the Comics Journal totally trashed me, and Wizard Magazine, you know, at one point plugged the book and saved it from being canceled. And, you know, so Wizard Magazine, I sort of wound up being the, you know, the opposite of what I expected. And I think it's because, you know, my stuff is very story-oriented, which mainstream people, you know, people who get bored of superheroes are like, I want to see something that's different, but... you know, not quite as arty as a lot of the independent comics.
Sure.
Like mine's kind of like a middle between, you know, it's like an alternative comic for people who hate alternative comics.
It's a nice change of pace that, you know, once people kind of, you know, get, you know, step out of the mainstream, your stuff is very, very accessible. And I really admire that, you know. And we read a lot of different comics, but you know, yours is one that popped up on the radar, you know, pretty quickly. And so, you know, that's one that you know, we've been pretty remiss in not talking to you, but we've been fans of your work for a long time. So,
thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, do we have anything else for Mr. Robinson?
No, I think you've done
yeah?
enough.
Yeah.
He's feeling good right now.
Yeah.
But no, I think we should leave.
Let's not ruin it, Tom.
Not that I would ruin it, but I don't think I can match. That's what you've done. I know.
Putting to bed with a smile on his face.
I really like Box Office Poison. It seemed, now that doesn't seem that awesome after what you said.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was pretty good.
I enjoyed it. You know, I've read it a couple times. I've gotten his gifts. Oh, what? What are you?
I liked it better when I was a shining beacon of your.
I know. Like,
the reason why I read comics.
What am I supposed to say to him? Yeah. You know, like, yeah. What do I say after that?
The indie darling. So, all right. Well, Alex, feel free to touch base with us anytime. We'd love to have you back on the show, especially whenever you're ready to talk about your new project. And yeah, happy holidays, man.
Well, thanks very much, and thanks for having me on the show. You guys, it was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Come on, guys.
And there you go. I have to thank Alex Robinson for spending some time with us. Open up a beer there, Tom.
He should thank you for all that ass kissing.
As an ambassador of comics, I'd like to thank you and present you with this laurel and hardy wreath.
When I read your books, it was like being made love to by two centaurs. I was left lying breathless on my couch, unable to gather my wits, sweating.
Well, that's
it.
That,
was like that.
That's how right. Well, usually you just reserve that for Rucka. I mean, that's the thing. Rucka is usually the only one that gets the Taiwan basket, you know, treatment and everything like the Sybaris.
All the positions.
Greg, if you want to lay down for a second, I'm just going to lather you up for a second.
I'm trying to. I'm trying to diversify.
I know it's all right, man. It's cool. No, you know, honestly, and I backed out just because I haven't had a chance to crack open an Alex Robinson and really enjoy his stuff. And lots of fellow podcasters are huge fans, as are others.
Box up is poison.
That's what I keep hearing, and also Too Cool to Be Forgotten. Mm-hmm. I hear those are the two.
Thanks for Hank. Thank you, Hank. All right, so yeah, definitely check out Kidnap Santa Claus. I know that we're getting close. I think you have a few shopping days left here before Christmas, and if you're looking for one of those last minute stocking stuffers, A Kidnap Santa Claus by Frank L. Baum, adapted by Alex Robinson. It retails for $14.99. It's from HarperCollins Publishers. You should find it. I know you can get it at Amazon or finer bookstores near you. So check that out.
Cool.
So
bam.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, we got about 15 minutes left here. You want to knock out some comic talk?
Do you know? Yeah, I was going to say, you guys want to talk about this Frazetta stuff? Or,
oh, you know.
Yeah.
You honestly, know. I just thought that.
We should get through some voicemails.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Sure. I'm sorry. By all means.
What's
your show, kids?
Frazetta might have called to ask if we want to help him move some paintings.
Actually,
my backhoe while we're listening to these voicemails.
While I've
run a backhoe.
While I am calling up some voicemail, why don't you guys talk about the Frazetta happenings of the last week.
Yeah, John, you do it in a news voice.
Apparently. Dateline. Pennsylvania. Apparently, Frank Jr., Alphonse Frank Frazetta, or otherwise known as Frank Jr., because he had the book of... He had a cartoony style. For a while, he did draw Frank Jr. Yeah. But apparently, he and friends... took a backhoe to the back door of the Frazetta Museum and tried to.
Key. It's just that it was a backhoe cracks me up.
Yeah, no. and tried to walk away with
$20 million.
Yeah, 90 paintings worth of insured at $20 million, and it's this very icky family feud that's been going on. I guess unfortunately since Ellie Frank's wife passed away, because Ellie was running the business for everybody, and. I think
so now that she's gone, it's just like the kids are all
yeah
fighting with each other.
Because, you know, Heidi McDonald really did a good job of analysis beyond the initial AP story that I read. And I would suggest people go to the Beat and check out the
very
details.
The very damning AP story. Well, I mean, terrible mugshot.
Exactly. I was going to say, all we really got was the mugshot and the police report. And but Heidi apparently is like, yeah, there's a little more to the story. And I guess, really, it is between all the Frazetta kids, the daughter and sons, that are all kind of fighting over, you know, who's controlling the business. Things were turned over to two guys that were kind of running the gallery, and they even sold a painting recently for $1 million, you know, an individual painting. That's not my phone, so.
No.
Calls are standing by. It's like pledge time here at Around Comics.
Click, click.
But no,
We're only $4 million from our goal.
I'm very sorry to hear, too, that I guess Frank is not doing too well. He's 81. He's suffering from dementia.
Yeah.
He's had such a tough last 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, literally since the 90s. I mean, you know, that's when he had the stroke and lost the ability to draw with his right hand, was able to, in an amazing way, draw with his left hand and still be Frank Frazetta and draw quality work.
Which is nuts.
And that shows you what kind of genius he was. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is just, it's so sad. And it, you know, comes on the heels of Tiger Woods. And it was kind of icky, but the fact that the art was involved, I'm like, oh.
Ooh, the painting.
That's
hopefully
kinda,
they didn't screw up the paintings.
So I don't know. You know?
Well, I mean, that's one of the amazing things about Frank Frazetta is that, I mean, he's a guy that had a lot of foresight in that he was commissioned to do all of these amazing pieces of art. He never sold the actual original art. He kept a hold of that, and that's why this art is still there to be protected. That's why it's in this museum, is because he kept a hold of all the originals.
Well, and was able to further market them literally for generations make posters, and the inside of my van is like totally based on a Frazetta.
Listen, I have a Frazetta van. It's mostly barbarians and different types of beasts.
You know, and even the recent initiative from Image, the Frazetta comics, have been fantastic.
Yeah, those have been
Jay Photos
been
and Josh good. Ortega and company.
It's one of those situations
the
where
Death
it's like...
Great.
Wouldn't families start arguing and shit like that? It's very rarely where it's a case where one person's like, I'd fuck the rest of the family, I'm gonna steal, you know, like, it's usually stuff's been going on for a long time and there's various levels of why things are happening.
Yeah.
It's just complicated.
This is the kind of thing you hear about at, like, holiday time where it's like, oh yeah, did you hear about the cousins
Christmas
back east? Ugh.
At the Frazettas.
It's going to be interesting this year.
Awkward.
All right. Well, I tell you what. What's up?
That's
what's
the headline. Christmas at Frazettas.
Well, I hope they work everything out, and I hope that it's worked out privately because...
it was ugly. It was an ugly story.
Yeah, and I mean,
my
honestly,
dad's got a backhoe, man. We can get up to Pennsylvania fast.
And I hear that Frazetta Museum is amazing, though security is not that...
Obviously.
No, the cops got him right away, though. You got to say that.
I would say a guard... wouldn't necessarily be able to. I wish I could see this caper going on, like them taking the little boy in and drive. Like, was there already a backhoe near there? Did he bring a backhoe?
His backhoe?
Can't get out of my mind is every shot of Frank Jr. from that great documentary that was made about 10 years ago, Playing with Fire. Mm-hmm. Is Frank on a golf course with like a Big Bertha kind of driver? So I kind of see him taking that same kind of swing with the backhoe to the back.
It'd be funny if most of the video of him in that documentary was in a backhoe.
You know,
which is odd. Who would have thought? You know, I like driving this backhoe. This is what I do.
Oh, I thought that was like a garden hoe when they said a backhoe. Is it something different?
A backhoe is a
tell me
like the excavating machine. Because my father owns an excavating company that goes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you.
Oh
like,
my
it's
god,
a giant piece of fucking machinery.
I honestly thought it was like you know like a garden.
Oh, you didn't know what a backhoe?
No, I didn't realize
a backhoe is a large piece of construction excavating equipment.
Yeah,
it's what they use
it's
to dig.
It's like
this.
They use it to dig huge fucking holes.
I read Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel. Okay, yeah. I'm up to speed now.
I mean,
that's good. Thank you.
Which leads to my question of...
Was
the backhoe there? Did they bring the backhoe to it? Whose backhoe was it?
What's funny about it is that a backhoe... at top speed is about 12 miles an hour.
That thing, yeah, you're lucky. Yeah, like, but if there was a guard there, Number one, I'd be suspicious when the trailer comes up with the backhoe and then...
This is it in security. Did you guys plan any type of gardening or anything in the back here? Because there's a big scoopy thing.
There was a Flash Rogue called Backhoe for one issue in the mid-70s who robbed banks using a backhoe.
It moved incredibly slow.
Very slowly.
It didn't last very long.
The Flash was not... I think the Turtle tried to use a backhoe at one point to rob a bank.
All right, I tell you what, let's get to some voicemails. We've had some great ones here recently, and if you would like to give us a shout out over the phone lines, you can certainly do so by dialing 1-888-977-5903.
Is that the right one?
That is the right
one. I need a toll-free number.
There you go.
What's all right, would you?
Okay, thank you.
Hey, this is Ted from Indiana. Hi, I was just calling to say great show with the French guy from last week, Jean-Claude or French Toast. I can't remember what his name is. I'm sorry, but great show. I like what he's doing on Green Lantern. Hey, I'm reading X-Men. It's X-Men trade, Messiah Complex. It's pretty good. It's my first trade. First time ever reading the trade. I like it. It's pretty neat. Hey, man, through that whole book, they're talking about Cyclops and Xavier. They're beefing the whole time. You know, the Raptors like to call it beefing. They have something going on between them, but they never really explain what's going on. What happened? You guys can explain that for me. Thank you very much. Great show. And hey, I got a new phone. Let me know if this sounds any better than my last telephone service. Okay, thank you very much. Bye.
Hey guys, it's Kimmy from San Diego calling. Now that Smallville's finally, thank God, coming to an end, what do you guys suppose is going to be the next superhero / teen / you're going to see it on the CW comic book show? I think appropriately Teen Titans could possibly be good. I know there were talks of always wanting to do a Batman type of a Smallville series called like Gotham or whatnot, but a lot of people agreed they didn't want to see that character get fucked up. So what would your ideal teen superhero TV show be after Smallville's dead and gone? Thank you. Goodbye.
Hi, this is Black Lantern Vibe from DC's Blackest Night. And I just wanted to say that I'm here to give Tom Caters a big old boner.
All right, because of repeated technical difficulties and the fact that we've recorded this next segment twice, we're not going to do that again.
For your wife's sake, I don't want you to lose any more hair over this. You're really stressing out. I understand.
We're going to do these voicemails in a couple weeks because we've heard them four times now, and we've recorded our responses each time.
Yeah,
so
we're out of work.
Okay,
so
here we go. Ted, Professor Xavier is always wrong, so Cyclops decided to take charge.
The next CW comic book television show iteration, that's
Teen
for Cammy.
Titans.
Yeah, we all kind of think Teen Titans would be a good idea. Yeah.
JLA is a mess right now.
Even though Blackest Night Vibe is very funny.
Yeah.
But we're all pissed off that the James Robinson new lineup hasn't started yet, mm-hmm. and the regular JLA book continues to spin its wheels while Blackest Night
We should do the whole show
the
like a really fast
JLA.
Recap of a conversation
so
we've already had.
All right. So that's that. Okay.
All right.
And real quick, John, you have Greg Rucka coming
Rucka, Tim Seeley, JT Kroll all coming up on Word Balloon.
Great.
Obligatory Tom. Chris stalking Chris Rucka joke. I'm doing the Flash. It's like September 1977.
You know, you could be
somewhere.
In this new Superman movie.
Oh, I know.
Details inside.
There are details inside.
All right, Tom versus the Flash. Word Balloon.
I got a contest or something going on. Whatever.
Hellblazer, John Constantine coming up.
Later this week.
Later this week on Friday-ish. Yeah. We'll be back next week.
In between time.
Around comics.
We're going to have to re-record this, aren't we?
Not the beach ball
Not
again.
The beach ball.
Damn you, beach ball.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.